There are so many ways that the local church can help supplement and support their preacher, that the pastor can build up some other teachers. And so really, it's just, how can we utilize this to grow up and develop teaching in our local congregations, help from a kingdom perspective, and not just think, all right, to be the guy up there, you have to have gone through 12 years of education.
You're listening to the 95 Podcast from the team at 95 Network, where we host conversations specifically designed to support leaders in small and mid-sized churches.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 95 Podcast. My name is Carolee Culpepper, and I am here with Dale Sellers, our Executive Director. How are you doing on this fine day, Dale?
I'm doing lovely. And how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I was actually just thinking about it earlier. I had the best sleep last night, and that is like just
congratulations.
Can kick a day off so well. So
I didn't. So
oh,
congratulations
no.
to you. Yeah, I've gotten into this thing where I don't know. I never had allergies growing up, but it's like now it's just like congestion all the time. And so my daughter said, well, take a Benadryl every night. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with that is you got to wake up the next day.
Yeah.
You know, Benadryl's my drug.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. And so if we have a podcast, I won't take one, but then I don't sleep the night before. So today I was thinking, maybe I just should go ahead and take one anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, well, I'm glad you had a good night's sleep.
I must have taken yours. Well. Sorry about that.
No worries. No worries at all. Well, I'm really excited today because we're going down a vein on the podcast we've never been down before, which I will probably say that a lot over the years. We have Mark Messmore with us today. And Mark, where do you actually live?
I'm in Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky guys. So you guys have some big deer out there, but that's for
another podcast.
Anyway, Mark, welcome to the 95 Podcast today. We're glad to have you with us.
I am thrilled to be here today. Thank you guys very much.
So we're going to talk a little bit about your new book that you have. Mm-hmm. But before we do, who is this Mark? Tell us who you are. Tell us about your story.
As I said, my name is Mark. I've been married since 2002. We were sharing some stories prior to recording about how all of how you pop the question, how you ask parents, that sort of stuff. We were sharing some of that. Yeah. But I got two boys, two dogs, so they keep our home very hopping. My wife and I do. Mm-hmm. Been in full-time ministry since 2006. I've got degrees from Kentucky Christian University and Campbellsville University. And for a long time, I have felt that my calling lay not only in preaching and teaching, but helping train others to preach and teach. And so that's really the onus. And this book has been stewing around. Really, I thought it was going to be more of a college course, honestly, for years. And it's been stewing since I was in my mid-20s, probably, where I'm 41 now. So it's been stewing in my mind a long time. And then this past summer, I just started writing. And it ended up being fashioned into a book. It wasn't my plan, but that's how things have panned out. And I'm very excited about it.
So let's back ahead. Up and tell us about this book that you have.
Oh, well, basically it's called Simple Preaching Prep. And it is the entire idea. I was at a mentorship retreat, Bob Russell mentorship retreat. Bob Russell was the lead pastor of Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky for 40 years. It grew to about 16,000 while he was there. So he was there a very long time. This past fall, I was explaining it to him. And as I was explaining it to him, he said, "Sounds like your book is built to help people get on first." And that is the perfect example for it, because there's a lot about baseball that that I can't possibly teach you, but I could probably teach you how to get on first. The idea behind Simple Preaching Prep is just to help students, lay leaders, people like that, take their first steps to preaching their first message and establishing a model that they can grow on and grow with to flourish beyond. And so it's designed for those audiences, the students who want to preach their first sermon, lay leaders who perhaps want to dive further into how do I prepare a Sunday school lesson besides just reading off what was printed, or maybe I want to preach for the very first time, or maybe, and this goes into more probably where a lot of your audience is, a lot of the smaller church pastors don't have another staff member that they can just have come up on a regular weekly basis. Mm-hmm. Well, how amazing would it be to be able to train a couple of your lay leaders, or take a small book that's what, 66 pages, I think it is, and put it in their hands that can walk them through and have something pre-built to just give to them to help them walk through preaching for the very first time. And we could go into all sorts of tangents about how beneficial it is for the preacher, how beneficial that is for the congregation to have more than one voice coming from the pulpit. So really, that's what my book is about. And that's the gist behind it, to try to help people preach that first message and flourish beyond.
I mean, like lay leaders is in addition to the main pastor, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, some of those pastors who have perhaps been trained in this, I got to go back to the old Vince Lombardi, how he would begin every spring training, where he'd said, gentlemen, this is a football. Mm-hmm. Some established pastors might need a fresh perspective. They might need to go back to the very basics. That's really what this is about. It's to help people establish that a pattern and a model to preach that first sermon, because otherwise I have a lot of people, a lot of friends, I grew up in the church. Yeah. So I've known church world my entire life. A lot of these guys would say, yeah, I've heard a bazillion messages, but putting one together, that's complete foreign territory to me. And so really that's what the book is aimed at, to help them take those steps and to help them complete that first sermon and establish some of those patterns to say, this is how I would go about doing this beyond.
Let me ask you this. I know you said this has kind of been stewing in your mind for a really long time. What, first of all, started that? And what kind of things were you seeing in the church that kind of made you think, I need to write this and help people with this specific topic?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I got to go back to my first located ministry when I was on staff at a church in Indiana. And I was teaching people through one of Life Church's, lifechurch.tv, Craig Rochelle, one of their curriculum called Kazone, which really is just built to help you to find your purpose. It uses personality, uses spiritual gifts inventory, stuff like that. And I came to this conclusion that I am really wired to not only teach and preach, but to help train other teachers and preachers. And so I began developing a model that I wanted to be transferable, to easily communicate that to somebody else and train somebody else to be able to preach. Dale and I talked about this previously when we got on a video call, is that a lot of the models that have existed for probably a couple hundred years now, they're not working like they once did. Mm-hmm. Now, I am not opposed to, please don't have people hearing me that I'm anti-seminary or something like that. I led off with talking about my Bible college degrees, mm-hmm. very proud of those. But that's not exactly facilitating what the church needs right now. We have fewer people coming out of the seminaries, and there's all sorts of reasons about that. Fewer people are entering the ministry. I'll just say it that way.
Yeah.
Fewer mm-hmm. people are entering the ministry. A lot of people, and I know Dale has talked about this statistic a couple of times, a lot of people are leaving the ministry or considering leaving the ministry. Mm-hmm. And then we have a lot of baby boomers who have been established in ministry for a long time who are transitioning out mm-hmm. because that's just the season of life they're in.
Yep.
So how do we, and yes, I know that there's a lot more to pastoral role than just preaching, but how can we help equip some of the churches that exist already? And how can we help train up some people to fill this particular role of preaching? So I have been mulling around, stewing about this, and this book has less to do with my genius, has more to do with me collecting ideas and concepts from books, from conferences, and really just formulating them and synthesizing them into something that I feel is transferable to those who are wanting to take their first steps in preaching. So from even in my mid-20s, I had written down in a Google Drive, Google Doc, a preaching curriculum, like not just here is a preaching 101 course. I had like syllabus laid out for 101, 201, 301, 401. I don't know a lot of 20-something-year-olds
who do that. Boring.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I play golf.
Yeah. So that does qualify for me. Boring, geek, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, so all of that has been rolling around in my head, and I assumed that it was going to be some sort of college course that I ended up in. And then as we were heading on vacation, we had a 4-hour drive, and I just kind of started writing down in one of my notebooks a lot of this, and it became the outline for what ended up being my book. So that was the need that I saw.
Yeah.
And that is what has been motivating me personally in writing this.
Well, I want to double down and say again, you're not saying that you're anti-training or anti-schooling or anything like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The reason I wanted to have you on the podcast was that I felt like there were two specific needs that today could address that I think, and I've got your book, that your book could address. The first one is the fact that a lot of our pastors that are listening are bivocational. Mm-hmm. A lot of them do not have, 20, 30, 40 hours a week, which that in my mind blows my mind that people do that spend that much time preparing one message. Right. But they don't have a lot of time to do that. And so, having this simple guide that you walk them through is very helpful. The other thing that I believe is coming, and you've kind of alluded to this, I love churches that have preaching teams. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up, I went to a traditional Baptist church growing up, and we had Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And our pastor had to preach three messages that week, in addition to all the other things that he did. And I used to wonder, how does he do that? Mm-hmm. And when I pastored our small church, I still did a Sunday morning and a Wednesday night. And it was very hard at times to keep all that fresh. And again, it's not because I don't love God. I don't love his word. It's because there's so many other demands on you. If you're full time, add to that being a bivocational pastor. There's only so many hours in the day. And, if you listen to 95 Network, we talk about you got to prioritize your family and all that kind of stuff. So I thought this would be very helpful to help pastors understand. Maybe you have a couple of folks in your church that you could train. They can't go off to seminary. They can't go off to school somewhere. But maybe you could train and have and develop a preach, even if they preach once a month.
Yeah,
to help build that team. And so that's kind of why I wanted to have you to be here today and talk about this. Are you seeing more churches move toward the team model of teaching?
I can say that the churches that I have been involved in have always used some fashion of that. Sometimes it was very introductory and you had to almost introduce the church to, hey, yeah, it's okay if the lead pastor is not the only one preaching. Mm-hmm. It is okay. And even having some of your leaders supporting you vocally, like getting them on board with this, demonstrating how it's healthy for the pastor, demonstrating how it's healthy for the congregation. Mm-hmm. We have a new associate pastor here who's been here about 6 months, and he preaches about once a month now. And that has been a very healthy transition. And that sort of teaching team concept is very good. I mean, for some of these smaller church pastors, I'm going to defer to you because I'm probably going to say these, Dale, say these statistics wrong. I mean, the 95 Network is because 95% of churches are under 500.
Very
86%
good.
Of churches are under
87.
87% of churches are under 200. Yep. And 71%?
75.
75% of churches are under 100.
Yep.
I grew up in one of those churches. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a church that for much of the time only had one staff member who's preaching Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, doing all
and
the pastoral calls.
Everything else.
How amazing would it be if you could have a turnkey solution that you have some capable leaders to be able to put it in their hands and they can take one of those Sunday nights a month, or they can take the Wednesday night study, and you can train up three or four people to alternate throughout the year. This is not shirking all of your preaching responsibilities. That's not it at all, but it's helping a lot of those people take their first steps to finishing a sermon and developing a model so that they can grow beyond that.
Mark, let's dive in even a little deeper. According to this book that you study called the Bible, there's a guy named Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he started something called the church. And in Ephesians 4, he told us how to do it. And he said, I'm going to give you these ministry gifts, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers.
To prepare
and their job
God's
is
people.
To equip, to prepare people for the work of the ministry. This is a way to do that.
Absolutely.
As we record this, we're in the early beginning of 2022, and we are honestly the church is being transformed right before our eyes. Mm-hmm. The American church is having to redo it all.
Yes,
and one of the things I think is very important that needs to be redone is this: the role of a pastor. Thinking that they're supposed to do everything, and the people thinking that the pastor's supposed to do everything. That's not what the Bible says.
Mm-hmm. No.
It says we're supposed to be equippers.
Yeah, that's not what the Bible says. And also, it's sometimes there's pride involved. Sometimes there's unrealistic expectations involved. There are a variety of different spider web sort of things that we could go down through that lead to that. But yeah, it is not the role of one person to do everything. Mm-hmm. That is not a biblical concept.
I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about that. I was reading one of your blogs that you wrote, and you were kind of outlining what the benefits are of having somebody step in and, you know, preach a message here and there. And what are some of the obstacles? Can you just kind of dive in a little bit of like how this could be helpful for pastors, and then also what kind of obstacles they might face and how to overcome those?
Yeah. So you say, I read one of your blog. My immediate response is, oh, you were the one. So that's... That's kind of what I think immediately.
See, you are having an impact, buddy. You hang in there.
Yeah. You know what? And that's what I have had to, and this, I will get to your question, Carolee. I'm not ignoring that, but it just,
Sure he doesn't forget it.
Yes. I have had to very much accept that, you know what? It's okay that this is, that you are writing not to be a New York Times bestseller, but you are writing to hopefully make an impact in a few hundred churches, and that's okay. And I have had to have my own shift in mindset, and we could go and Dale could talk about this.
Being a little humble pie, is that what you're saying?
I have, and your book definitely kicked me in the tail in that regard a couple times. So some of the obstacles that a pastor may run into if they are wanting to train others, first of all, their own pride. Here's the thing: the lights, and I am saying this not as an expert in the field. No, let me rephrase that. I am saying this as an expert of somebody who has been addicted to the lights. I'll put it that way.
There you go.
I have
so had to deal. You're going to get honest today.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I have had to deal with my own pride, and because those lights can be very addicting. Having you be the person who has all the answers, and having you be the person that everybody is looking forward to can be really addicting. And so you have to deal with your own pride, but that's not healthy for the church. I have seen a lot of different places that when a pastor dies or when they move away or something, suddenly everything falls apart. What I like to say around here is that if I get hit by a pineapple truck, I want to make sure that everything keeps going. Not a lot of pineapple trucks in Kentucky.
I was going to say, Kentucky, I'm not worried about that one too bad.
Yeah, I'm not worried too much about that one. But I want to make sure that things are set up in such a way that it's not just reliant on me, because that's not healthy. So you have to deal with your own pride. Second of all, you may have to deal with the unrealistic expectations of some of your church members. As Dale was saying earlier, there has become this idea that if the pastor doesn't do it, it hasn't been done, or he or she should have been the one to do it. Luckily, I am not in a context where that's the case, and my elders support me in that. But if you are running into that, you really need to begin with your leadership, I would say. You need to get your leadership on your side and say, hey, here's a situation where this season of COVID has been perfect for this, because let's imagine that I wake up, suddenly I don't have a sense of smell, I don't have a sense of taste, and I feel like I have no energy whatsoever. A pretty simple conclusion is that I have COVID, and I should not be around a lot of people who are vulnerable. That's not a good idea. So what do we do if somebody is in that situation? We need somebody else who can step up and be able to preach. We need somebody else who can step in to that certain role and have that at least modicum of training that they can communicate this and without having to go away for 4 years for a seminary degree. So if you are concerned about some of the expectations of your congregation, my recommendation would begin with your leadership and begin with, as Dale's saying, Ephesians chapter 4, like, my job is to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body of Christ might be built up, not so that this can be the church of Mark. That is not a biblical thing. This is Jesus' church, and I need to try to prepare other people to do this. So yeah, that's some of what they would run into, and that's some of how I would respond to it. Now, Carolee, I would have to go back and probably reference some other things in that blog post, but that I'm not remembering off the top of my head. But that's what I would say initially from that question.
That's great. What are some of the benefits of a pastor being able to take a week off as far as the preaching goes?
Some of the benefits, honestly, as somebody who, again, I've been in full-time located ministry since 2006, I was privileged to be involved in a church that saw when I came on as the associate, that was my first role in a local church. They saw, one, that I had preaching and teaching ability, and two, they saw the benefit of having multiple voices from the stage, multiple voices from the pulpit. Your church will benefit immensely if you have more than just one voice. There are all sorts of reasons for that. We could talk about stylistically. They don't just get into the rut of this is exactly how our guy do it, because we all have those tendencies. Every single one of us does. And if they know exactly when you're winding up, well, if all of the people in your congregation know when you're finishing, that's when they're all putting their Bibles away and you hear the zip up of the little Bible covers and all that sort of stuff. Having a different voice helps to add some variety to that. Having a different voice is great for you. Oh my goodness. I can focus on other things. I can think long-term about, or I can focus on, all right, we're building a small group curriculum, or I have some training that I want to do with my elders that I can focus on during this season. It is immense. And then when you just look at bigger kingdom needs, you know, here we are in Kentucky. I'm in a rural community in Kentucky. There are all sorts of little churches all around here. Let's imagine for a second, because this is very realistic and this has happened. Let's imagine that we have a couple people who are trained and suddenly a local pastor gets sick, or a local pastor leaves.
So
and now
good.
This
so
local
good.
Church doesn't have anybody. Hey, you know what? I've got an elder over here. Who, no, he's got a different job, but he can come and he can preach once a month while you transition during this season. How huge of a benefit, a kingdom benefit, is that for this local church? When you're not just thinking about what does this do for us, but what does this do for the kingdom and this church down the road? And so all of these things are just so beneficial for the church, for the pastor himself. It helps us who deal with that addiction to the lights, helps us deal with that conflict and go, hey, this church can run without me. And that's a good thing. You know, so there are all sorts of huge benefits, Carolee, when you step out and you are willing and able to train somebody else to help take on this load.
That's awesome.
This is such a fresh word.
This is something that I've been passionate about a long time.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be really transparent with you. When we first started talking, I was not sure whether I wanted to put you on our podcast, because we have so many people who listen, who went through all the training, who went through the seminary, who understand, you know, and so I didn't want them to think we were just trying to say, hey, man, here's a way to avoid all that. No. But I hope people can already hear there's such a kingdom mindset in what you're saying here. And this is a way to equip. This, I mean, you don't have to be a seminary professor to teach these principles, which, but, you know, we want to make sure we save enough time to get to the actual content of those principles you have in the book. But this is not anti-education. This is just pro-church, pro-community, pro-equipping.
This is an example of how I am pro education. Like I said, I thought this was going to be in a college course setting. I thought that's how all this was going to fashion itself out. And it still may someday, it's hard to say. But I have thought two different times, like I said, I have a master's degree, and two different times I've thought about going back either for another master's or perhaps supplementing that and continuing on to some sort of doctoral program. Both times I've applied, both times I've gotten accepted, both times we've ended up pregnant. And so I just said, done. No, I no more.
You're just gonna keep having babies if you don't.
You were just celebrating the fact that you got into school and got a little carried away.
That was not the intention, but that was just kind of like both times found out. Oh, okay, I've been accepted. Oh, we're expecting. This is not a good time.
This
is not a good time for me to be traveling and doing a graduate education. I am very pro education. However. And Dale, as we've talked about, the models of relying on that are not sufficient for what the church needs. And there are so many ways that the local church can help supplement and support their preacher, that the pastor can build up some other teachers. I've had even some of the early reviews. I've had one lady who's a lawyer say this helped her get her legal soup of an argument into a coherent thought. I've had another guy say, this is going to help me in teaching Sunday school. And so really, it's just how can we utilize this to grow up and develop teaching in our local congregations, help from a kingdom perspective, and not just think, all right, to be the guy up there, you have to have gone through 12 years of education or whatever it is.
Hey, everyone. My name is Marianne Sibley, and I just wanted to jump in real quick and ask, are you frustrated standing around wondering, where are the volunteers? This is a hard, hard season. And I understand that maybe some people may not be coming back, or worse, they're back but not serving. Did you realize that people will actually decide whether to come back or not within the first 5 or 7 minutes of visiting you? Did you know that the sermon actually starts in the parking lot, and I would argue before the first name badge is put on? Did you know that you actually don't need more volunteers? That in fact, you just need the right volunteers. So that's why I'm here as part of the 95 Network. I help churches with all things volunteers, and especially in the area of guest services, because building real teams versus just gathering pools of people will make all the difference. So you'll have the best volunteer culture. So if you're worn out or you're overwhelmed, you're doing it all yourself, I think we should talk. You can reach me at marianne@95network.org, and I'm also on their website. Now back to the podcast.
It's so good, man. I mean, it's just fresh. And the church, as I said, the church is changing. And we just, we've got to change with it. We're not going to be around. It's really that simple. Mm-hmm. And the pressure that we're putting on ourselves as pastors. And man, I tell you what, I did it for 12 years. And it was very difficult to meet the expectations. This is going to help lift that load. So walk us through your model. You've got a model that you have here of,
yes.
How does it work?
Okay. So I have developed this model in two different ways. One is visual, because some people just learn better that way. Mm-hmm. And other is by an acronym, because some people that helps remember them.
Man, you talking, man? I'm an acronym kind of guy. You know what I'm saying?
You're an acronym kind of guy.
I am, so, man. Everything, you know.
Yeah, everything's an acronym.
I knew we were tracking.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. And but anything that I can get to help it stick. Mm-hmm. So if you are more of a visual learner, what I want you to imagine is an hourglass. Mm-hmm. And the concept that I have there is, honestly, I would like to, if I were teaching this in person, I would start at the bottom, because the foundation of your message is scripture and all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
But in communicating it into a book, telling people to think of an hourglass flowing backwards, it just didn't translate. Yeah. But anyway, so if you think about an hourglass, you're beginning at the widest part with all of your content. And each step of the model takes you down to a focal point to help you say, okay, here is what my message is ultimately going to be. Then once you come up with that focal point, or main idea statement, then you're able to build out and add application, illustration, add structure to it, etc. So if you're thinking of it from the visual aspect, think about an hourglass. The acronym is the word inside. And it begins with this. It's interview the text, asking who, what, where, when, why, how, looking at it as though you are almost a reporter going to a scene, trying to understand. Because here's one of the big faults that a lot of times preachers have. We go in and we've spent all week studying this text. We go in mm-hmm. guns blazing because we have lived this. Our people are coming in. They haven't lived it. They have been dealing with all of their other things. And we go, okay, now I'm sure you know about what Paul says over in Ephesians, and somebody's going, what's mm-hmm. an Ephesian? Or, you know, or here's one that I love to say, is that you say, all right, what we find is that Paul got stoned. Could you possibly take time to discuss what that means and define what that means? Because we've been living in this.
Yes.
And so you ask these sort of questions. It's interviewing yes. the text. That's where you begin. Then you narrow the focus.
By the way, Paul got stoned with rocks.
Yes, Paul got stoned with rocks.
Our listeners knew that.
Yes, I figured audience probably would be very familiar with that.
Some of them thinking, how did he drink a rock? Anyway, I'm sorry. I digress.
So, and then the N of inside is narrow the focus. I have four clarifying questions, and these are not new. Again, this is not novel information, but I've just tried to make it as accessible mm-hmm. as possible. Mm-hmm. And it's to help take all of that information and begin to narrow it down. That's the point, narrow the focus. If you've ever put together a puzzle, you know that you look at the box to try to figure out where mm-hmm. this thing is going, mm-hmm. where all these pieces are going to go, what's going to look like. But what if you didn't have the front of the puzzle box, mm-hmm. and you just had a bunch of pieces. Is it the Mona Lisa? Is it Bigfoot? Is it a dolphin? What is all of this? Mm-hmm. All of these questions are beginning to help that picture formulate in your mind. And that's really what the S is. That's where you begin to state your main idea. You've interviewed the text, you've narrowed the focus, you state the main idea. We have some exercises in there just to help you get down to that. What is this message ultimately about? Mm-hmm. Because any passage could go in a lot of different ways. And sometimes preachers are very guilty of trying to do all of the ways.
Yeah. Oh, and so it's now just, you're really talking.
It's just, how can I state what this particular message is about? After that, we begin to include structure and support material. How am I going to put this together? What's the application? What's the illustrations that it's all going to go into that? Mm-hmm. Then we deliver the message. Most of the book is geared about the preparation part rather than the presentation part, because mm-hmm. those are two different skills. Mm-hmm. I know you talked about that recently on a podcast. Mm-hmm. And so when you deliver the message, I just have some basic ideas, because we all have different personalities. We have different delivery types. So this section in this particular book is very general about preparing your mind, your heart, and your body to deliver that message, mm-hmm. okay. because the delivery portion is a whole nother book or another, yeah,
absolutely.
Another word. And then evaluation, something that I have struggled with over the years. First of all, how do you get feedback? How do you apply feedback? A lot of times we don't even bother with feedback because we just kind of go, all right, there's another one. Now I'm going to turn mm-hmm. around and start it all
absolutely.
Up again.
Mm-hmm.
And just absolutely trying to improve in your preaching, because I'm communicating the very word of God. I am standing in front of God's people with words that he has inspired. I want to try to do the best I possibly can to help convey, here is what God's message truly is. So to do that, I need to evaluate it to be able to get better. So that's the acronym. That's some of the content of the book. And each of the chapters go over a specific portion of that, where we just try to say, here's how to do that for the first time and develop it beyond.
You know, when we've been talking here, I've got, I think this is a 12-ounce cup of coffee that I've been mm-hmm. sipping on today. You can pour 75 ounces into it if you want, but it's only going to hold 12.
Yep.
And I have observed in most of my life that we give people too much. We preach past their saturation point. Mm-hmm. And then it's wasted. And so I determined when I was pastoring the small church, and again, just having to preach twice a week, I was like, I would rather give them one point they get than mm-hmm. three they don't. Mm-hmm. And I was very guilty of at times overdoing. So I tried to pull back. The other thing I hated was I hated to hear myself preach. And see, back in the day before you guys were born, there was a thing called a cassette tape, and we'd listen to our message, try to go back to it and listen to it. But what I've today, the most effective preachers I know actually have people that they allow to speak into their mm-hmm. message and go, hey, did that connect? Did that not connect? Mm-hmm. Another thing that happened to me it happens in my writing too. And a part of Carol Lee being here is to help me make sure I don't do this with my copy, is I'll get hung up on certain phrases. Mm-hmm. And I'll use them all the time. And I was telling Carol Lee when I wrote the book you referred to, when I wrote Stall, there was 1,000 explanation points that had to be taken out.
Exclamation.
Yeah. I had 1,000 of them.
He was excited.
That's the way I always wrote. And my editor said, Dale, let your words do the talking. And so, I was guilty of that. But when I was preaching, one of the things that I picked up from Charles Stanley back in the 80s, Charles Stanley would always go, Now listen, and I picked that up and did not realize how many times I said that in a given message till I went back and listened to it. So there is a really important need, if you will, to evaluate and honestly evaluate so you can get better, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a reason that even the best professionals at whatever field you're talking
now
about
you're going,
have coaches. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that they have coaches.
John Sanders mm-hmm. just yelled amen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Mean, Tom Brady, whether you like him, whether you hate him, whatever, he has had a coach mm-hmm. everywhere he has been because mm-hmm. he has recognized he can get better.
That's right.
And you, regardless of what your field is, regardless of how long you've been preaching, you can get better. Sometimes you can do some of that evaluation on your own, sitting mm-hmm. back and evaluating, going through. I also walk through in the book some of the ways that you can begin to get valuable feedback from within your congregation, because most preachers that I know are very familiar with one of two responses. Either one, just people walking out going, good sermon. That's not helpful. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or the only response they get is when people are angry about something. Mm-hmm. And again, that's often. And
you don't get that face to face. You get that in a letter later in the week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A letter, an email,
something like that. If you got someone who is bold enough to tell you face to face, you're already in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something that's completely. But so how do we actually utilize and how do we get valuable feedback from people that we trust, who have our best interest in mind, who love us, who love Jesus, who want us to improve, who can, if they come up and say, all right, you really messed up on this one, we're going to listen because we know that they want our best. Mm-hmm. We know that they have our best interest in the church, best interest in mind. And they also are going to come up and go, you know what? You nailed it this week. Mm-hmm. You nailed this, this, and this. And Dale, to your point earlier, the most valuable experience I had with this was in my first located ministry, where the lead pastor, Daryl, and I, we would send each other our manuscripts in advance. We would both review them. We would give between services. We would give feedback. We would be talking consistently about this. So that's part of how I learned. And granted, that's not always possibility at some churches, but it doesn't have to be. There are a lot of ways that you can get feedback, and a lot of ways you can get evaluation.
I have one more quick question. How do you go about identifying someone who would be a good fit to preach on a Sunday morning?
That is excellent.
Because,
is,
I mean, you know, everybody's gifted in different ways. So I'm sure there's probably a certain type of person who would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What I would not recommend is just standing up on stage and say, hey, anybody want to learn to preach? Because
okay,
probably
that's a good starting point.
The people that you don't want to be up there are going to be the first ones to come up. Mm-hmm. So there are some who, if you are a local pastor in a local situation, there are some who you are likely going to see and identify as potentially having this sort of gift. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're in a small group and they just kind of rise to that occasion and you kind of see them take that leadership, or maybe they're in a class and they're leading, or maybe you've just spent time with them and you know that there's some spiritual maturity there and there's some depth to who they are. And they seem to perhaps have this giftedness in other environments. One individual that an early iteration of this material I taught in my previous church, and I had about four guys and we met at a Bob Evans every Saturday and we went through the content. One of the guys, he was involved in a local news anchor. Mm. Wow. And so he was very used to communicating. He had some biblical depth. He had some spiritual depth. So I knew his character and I saw some of that. And so we just kind of fostered that. So really you have to see who is a potential, how are they panning out. In other ways, I'm going to go back to my own personal experience. You may have some young teenagers that you go, hey, we're going to have a youth Sunday. I'm throwing out, some of you might love that. Some of you might hate that. Hey, we're going to have a youth Sunday. Maybe it's a Sunday night. Maybe it's a Sunday morning. And the youth are going to do everything. Which of you want to walk through the process of preaching? Or you kind of maybe identify one or two. I'm going to work with the two of you. Mm-hmm. To develop a sermon, as long as they're not deer in headlights and panicking and running away and leaving the church at that moment, you can at least begin to foster some of that.
Yeah, you got to set them up for success.
Yeah.
You got to set them up for success.
Yeah.
I want to dive into something. I've never, ever talked about this on the podcast, but you've brought this up in me. One of the things I think that it wasn't devastating, but it certainly sent me down a wrong road growing up, was we had people who would teach Sunday school classes who couldn't teach. Oh. And here's what I mean. I grew up in a very large Baptist church. And so, you know, once the kids got out of children's church age, you know, we didn't mix. So all the boys had a Sunday school class. All the girls had a Sunday school class all the way through high school. And so you needed a bunch of teachers. This was a larger church. Yeah. And there were so many times that I had people as Sunday school teachers that did not have the ability to teach. They did not prepare. They did not want to be there. And they made me hate church. Yeah. They made me hate Sunday school. I mean, I'm in the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grades when I really am trying to figure things out. And I had these teachers that just did not, they didn't put any effort into it. You know, back then we had a thing called a quarterly and they would just get up and read to us. And it was even bad because someone couldn't even read well. And they gave me a disdain for the Bible. They gave me a disdain for church. I didn't want to be there. It was boring. The flip side of that is there were a couple of guys. One of them was a fellow that I actually helped do his funeral a few years ago. His name was Don Dunn, and Don was a 10th grade boy Sunday school teacher. And he would take that text that was in the quarterly, he would read it, and then he would set it down, and he would teach the Bible to us. And I stayed in his class for 2 years because he changed my life. When Don passed away, they asked me to do part of his funeral because someone had heard me tell this story about how he gave me such a love for the Bible. And so the reason I want to share that is part of equipping is helping people find their gift. Part of equipping is helping people find what God's called them to do and point them in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And that's your job as a leader of the church, is to equip saints. And I believe, you know, you may not have but one or two teachers, but there are people who have the gift to teach there. And so I always tell churches, it's better to do 4 Sunday school classes with people who can teach than 20 classes with people who can't, because the outcome is bad. And so thank you for kind of diving into that a little bit, because I believe all pastors have an intuition. If they've been called a pastor, I believe they have an intuition to help people find their place and plug them in, because that's what we're required to do.
Yeah. And it's what you're talking about, it's the warm body syndrome. We just need a warm body to fill this role, and it is so dangerous.
It'll derail a lot of people.
Yeah, it'll derail a lot of people. It's not good for the kingdom. It's not good for that person. Mm-hmm. So often, because as you said, they're not passionate about it. They're just filling a role. They don't like it. And so, yeah, it's so dangerous. And so, it's devastating. And I know what it feels like to fall into that, because you're kind of panicking going, I've got to do this. And maybe you need to step back with your leadership and go, do we need to do this?
This is another time, blame COVID. Just change it all. You know, if you're doing 20 classes and you're always scrambling for teachers and you don't have people, cut it back to 5 or however many teachers you have, and just blame COVID. I'm telling everybody, blame COVID for the next 20 years for everything you change.
Yeah. And even that, make sure for some of those teachers may have at least a modicum of giftedness. So work with them. Mm-hmm. Develop them. Don't send them out into the wild to figure it out on their own. Instead, support them, walk with them, get some resources so that they know, okay, this is how I study the Bible. This is how I develop a lesson. This is how I talk with a class. And no, you may not have a teacher who teaches on during the week, like a school teacher who wants to turn around and teach on Sunday. You know what often I found individuals like that are great for? Helping train others how to teach, helping develop some of your classroom teachers, because they have all of that education. So would you be willing to help this person just understand how to navigate working with a class of, I don't know, fifth graders or whatever it is. So yeah, but that warm body syndrome can be incredibly, incredibly dangerous.
When you think about it, as you've written this book, what is your ultimate goal? What is it? What is it you want to accomplish with this book?
My ultimate goal, I referenced this earlier, it's to hopefully get in the hands of a few hundred churches or pastors and make a difference for the kingdom. It's just to train up some people so that they can, for the first time, preach or perhaps develop a process or a pattern when they go, you know, I'm trying here, but I don't have any idea what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I want to kind of give you a glimpse into the conclusion. I have a friend named Heather who went to England when she was in college, and she did some mission work in England. She told me this story about in a village that she visited. It had been a functioning church since the 1400s, 1300s, something like that. And up on the wall was this plaque of names of ministers that they had since that church's inception. And so you have hundreds of years of names that people you and I have never met and probably never even heard of. And yet these are people who have carried on the tradition of spreading and sharing the gospel. Mm-hmm. My favorite passage in all of Scripture is Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. goes partially because I'm a runner and partially because of this passion. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Let us consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men that you will not grow weary and lose heart. My hope is that this is one way that I can pass the baton and help some others pass the baton to others to help the Church of Jesus Christ grow right there where they are, whether they are in the suburbs of Albany, New York, or they're in the rural portions of Louisiana, to help their church grow and share the message of Jesus. That's my hope.
That's awesome. Well, Mark, this has been, I just think, really encouraging. I love your heart. I love your heart for the kingdom and for churches of any size. And I really think that you have a gift in teaching and equipping other people for this. So as we close today, we always love to just ask a final question. What is something, a word of advice, hope, or encouragement that you could give our listeners today?
Word of advice, hope, or encouragement? I thought you were going to ask it like I heard you ask John Sellers, where he said, what is something you're encouraged by, you're hopeful for the church? So that's what I was preparing for. That was the only one that I was preparing
for. You know what? It's your day. Pick which one.
Let me just say, and Dale has referenced this already, it's be looking at not just the way we've done things, but how can we meet the challenges that are ahead of us? Mm-hmm. The thing that I'm hopeful for the church is that, yeah, I've had some pushback, particularly in the academic community, where they're like, you know, it's okay, but I've got all this curriculum and all of this deep theological stuff. And that, you know, I get that, but I have been so thrilled with people recognizing, hey, I just want to take that first step. I just want to get on first. And I want to find unique ways to be able to train up the next generation of church leaders, to help encourage our pastors who are there and help them to train up the next generation of church leaders. That's what I'm hopeful for. That's what I'm encouraged by. And whether it's my book or whether it's something else, what I would encourage the pastors to do is just look for ways that you can do that, not just to build a brand, not just to get people in your doors, though that is fantastic, but to actually look, how can I make a long-term kingdom impact with what God has called me to do and where God has called me, regardless of whether that's in a big church, a small church, or wherever that is, how can I make a difference for the kingdom?
Great.
How can people get a copy of your book?
If you go to markmessmore.com, you'll find that there's a link to Amazon, or if you just go to Amazon, you can search for Simple Preaching Prep. Three words, Simple Preaching Prep, and you'll find it out there. Also, if you want to, you can find on Facebook, Simple Preaching Prep. I have that as a page out there that I'm posting those blogs that Kara Lee actually read from one of them. But I'm posting blog posts and other news and things like that, as well as hopefully some encouragement for churches, for pastors, and where some of this might go. I am sending the introductory chapter to 95 Network. So you guys will have that available in the show notes or on your website or something like that. I'll let you guys know where that's at. So if you just want to kind of check it out, it's at 95. I'm going to send the introductory chapter to you guys and for your listeners to be able to peruse and see if they want to dive in, whether it's on Kindle, whether it's the regular copy, what have you.
Great.
We love your heart. I really appreciate your heart. I'm so glad we connected a few months ago. I know that I know what it's like to pour your life into something like writing a book, because I did it. And and you know, that's you, man. I mean, that's when you put that out there, it's your heart, it's your passion. And you didn't write this book just so you could have a book. You want to help. And I know Jesus is going to use it to help a lot of folks. And so thanks for taking the time to be with us today, for what you're doing. We're going to help, you know, as best we can, get the word out about it as well. And look forward to how God's going to use you in the days ahead.
Well, thank you so much for having me. As you know, the book writing world, and then turning around and trying to let people know about your, it's such a weird, weird, different experience. Oh, it's so weird.
You feel creepy.
Yes, you do. So I'm very much navigating all of this and learning it. So thank you guys very much for having me. I can't tell you how thrilled I was to be here and spend some time with you guys.
Thanks for listening to the 95 Podcast. We look forward to sharing another episode with you again soon. In the meantime, here's a preview from our next episode.
There are some folks that actually believe that the pastor has no faults. And so some folks actually fall into that trap that they have to present as if I have no faults. And when you present like you have no faults, guess what? That's your biggest fault, because now you have the spirit of pride that has come in. The Bible tells us that pride cometh before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall.
Be sure to visit our website at 95network.org. The website is loaded with helpful resources created for small and mid-sized church leaders. Until next time, have a great week.